Our esteemed clerk will lead us in the pledge to our flag.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. Our clerk will now take the roll call.
Councilmember Watson.
Present.
Councilmember Hanson.
Here.
Councilmember Olson.
Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Here.
Councilmember Mutzler.
Here.
Councilmember Zimmerman.
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Here. All present and accounted for. Good job, Council. Okay, next up is the public comment period. This is the period where anyone from the audience can come forward and address the Council with anything that is not on the agenda, so anything you'd like to talk to the Council about, anything at all. Just like you. So you got your hand up, you're first. Okay. Anyone else will wait after you. Welcome, sir.
Yeah, my name is Fred Rudolph, and I came to the council back in February with the idea of getting an old building tore down, which was a hazard to children and an eyesore to the city. Well, something seems to be radically wrong because it took 10 months to get that building down. I think your ordinance ought to be revamped and changed and put some penalties into it, and I don't think the city has to do all the legwork to get the building down.
Okay. Comments from staff?
I think that those are fair criticisms. Certainly, that we would have liked the building to have been taken down more quickly. Obviously, you know that there are, you know, the necessary steps that need to take place as far as notification and providing a property owner the ability to hire a contractor. But with that said, certainly a delay between February and December is more than we would like to see. So your comments are noted.
Okay. Well, I have another on 6235 Portal Way. There's an old building that hasn't been used for years, and further on back, there's a couple old mobile homes that are just sitting there. And again, I think the city ought to do something to improve the looks of the city. Portal Way is an arterial road, and it's bad enough that the road is going to hell, and nothing's being done about it. And, Mr. Mayor sent me a letter back in April, I think it was, to if I wanted to join any of the activities. Well, I don't think there's much activity going on with this council. I really don't. And if I see something going on, do it. And I'm sure there's a lot of other areas in the city that you people see, and nothing's being done about it.
Okay.
Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you. Anyone else from the audience?
I apologize for being late. I got caught in the traffic.
Oh, no problem. Come to the podium and you can speak your name.
That bridge down and traffic in this town came back the whole time.
Yeah, quite a bit. I think we're going to have to put up with Slater for a while. I don't think it's going to happen quickly.
Sounds that way.
So your name and your name, sir.
Yes, Tony Nordmans. And I'm from 1424 Cascara Court here in the city, just outside the edge of the city. And so I'm presently involved, in fact, establishing reintegrative training for our returning veterans in the area of sustainability of food, water, shelter, community. And to this evening, I have an issue that's more direct with what our community is dealing with, and that is the water quality issue. And so I've been thinking about this and understanding the challenges that are before the community and the city. At the council presently, what do you do to alleviate the problems? And that our people are really expressing the hardness of the water, and how do you deal with that? And so I came up with the thought, I'm going to ask a couple of questions. What percentage of water usage available to the city is still river water? What percentage of it is well water? And if that percentage of river water is sufficient to supply our human needs, which is the acceptable level of mineralogy, and allow the industries that are buying from this site or from this area, allow them to use the well water. Seems to me then that would alleviate the need for homeowners to look at the possibility of having to purchase water softeners, clean water issues, and that sort of thing that our people are really struggling with. So that's really my take on it as an option, as an opportunity, and I thank you for listening.
Now, what you might want to do is you can give your questions, if you have those questions, other questions in writing, and then later on the agenda, we're going to basically be discussing a contract for water softening equipment and alternatives. That's later on the agenda, but if you'd like to stay for that, we will be discussing that issue in more detail.
Mm-hmm. So. Yes, I understand that. But if the water softening issue is the only route, maybe we should look at a different direction rather than getting into a heavy engineering level and demand. Maybe we just shift the water bus, shift our seat in the water bus, if you will, so that the population can use the river water and the industries use the heavier waters. Yes, right.
I have a question that kind of tags on to what you're saying. Do we, as the city, do we have any more water rights to the river?
No. We didn't have any water rights to the river. They belong to PUD.
Okay, so when we severed that contract as of tonight, we're not
severing any contract. Oh, in terms of the settlement tonight you're going to talk about?
Yeah.
No, that wasn't that wasn't a severing of a contract.
Nor.
This is a pretty complicated, multifaceted issue that I'm not so sure the discussion should be in the open comment period. I mean, there's a lot of detail here and a lot of questions that he's asked.
I can live with that. But getting back to what Mr. Nordman was saying, now do we, so we get zero water from the river. We have no.
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, we intend to have a public open house before we, this contract will study alternatives. We're not hiring somebody to do something, but we intend to have an open house once the contract that we let tonight gives us some more information on our plate, and then we'll invite the public in and tell them what direction we're going to go. So that information is coming down the road, and some of your questions and some of your answers will be answered then. Okay, any other question for this gentleman? Okay. Thank you, sir. Anyone else from the audience would like to come forward on the open comment period? No, seeing none? Okay. We'll move on. I'm going to close the regular council meeting at 6:08:56. And I'm going to open up the Transportation Benefit District Board meeting. So the Transportation Benefit District Board meeting is open at 6:09:08. Janice, are you gonna run from here?
Mark's gonna cover 1 and 2.
Okay.
Council, as reviewed in committee, these two resolutions. The first one is a reworking of the interlocal agreement between the TBD and the city, between the Ferndale Transportation Benefit District and the city. It simply outlines. The biggest change probably is clarifying the language as far as the TBD bearing reasonable and ordinary costs of operation of the TBD. A second one is the checking account that we opened for the Transportation Benefit District. This authorizes that It also has as an attachment the checking account and who the signers and what it's used for and what the dollar limits are, similar to the city's resolution on all their accounts. And then thirdly, Janice has an updated project list.
Since we received a state grant for Vista from second to just before the roundabout, then we needed to update our TBD project list and move it up to year 2013, so for next year. So that's a change we've made on our list. And then we've also added Main Street for crack sealing in either 2013 or 2014, depending on funding.
Any questions? Councilperson Goodrich, and then Hansen, and then Zimmerman.
I make a motion that we approve Agenda Bill TBD 12-12-001.
I'll second that.
That's the interlocal?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to do that one first. Any further discussion? It was moved and seconded. Councilperson Zimmerman?
I was just curious how long, when was the money asked for, and how long did it get to go through the pipeline?
Point of order, that has nothing to do with this. That's the third item.
Okay. Well, it's kind of like we did this a little odd. You guys kind of slipped over. It might have been good to discuss each item and then vote on each resolution. So
there's already a motion.
Yes, so now we have a motion that's directly related. But so the discussion would be on the city TBD interlocal agreement. That's what's before you now in your packet. That's what's been motion and second to vote on. So any discussion on that one, and then we'll go back to your issue on the third one. So any discussion on the TBD city interlocal agreement? Okay, seeing no discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion carries 7-0. Now the next one, if we're going to go in order that we just slipped over, was the Transportation Benefit District checking account. Councilperson Goodrich?
I'll make the motion to approve Agenda Bill TBD 12-12-002.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded by Councilperson Olson. Any discussion? TBD checking account resolution. Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Now for discussion, if you want to discuss that, let's bring forward Councilperson Zimmerman's question on the third resolution, the TBD annual project list update.
Okay, and I think the call for projects was probably in June, and then they just made the selection probably a couple weeks ago.
That's fast. Mm-hmm. Okay, any other discussion on that? Okay, motion to move forward. Councilperson Hansen?
That's exactly what I was going to do, a motion to pass the updated project list.
Second.
Okay, been moved and seconded. Who was first? I think it was Councilperson Watson. Okay. Any discussion on this one? Okay, seeing no discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Okay, I'm going to close the TBD board at 6:13:30. And we're going to enter open our regular council session at 6:13:38. Okay, we're back in regular session. The consent agenda, council, I'd like to pull two things from the consent agenda tonight. I'd like to pull the planning commission appointment and the PUD settlement agreement, and I'd like to handle those issues right after we approve the consent agenda, if so moved.
So moved.
Just seconds. Councilor Zimmerman?
I'd like to also pull the fee code ordinance.
Okay. Fee code. Okay, so we'll go that third in the line. Okay, so other than those three items, can we clear the rest of the consent agenda?
I move the adoption of consent minus those three items.
Okay, seconded?
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries 7-0. Okay, first one is the Planning Commission appointment, and I believe Councilperson Mutchler wanted to discuss that.
I would like to make motion that Council approve the Mayor's nomination for the Planning Commission, Fred Kennedy. And if there is a second, I'd like the opportunity to introduce Mr. Kennedy to the council because they may not know him.
Sorry.
Okay. Motion and second. You may proceed.
Yeah, thank you very much. I don't think any of you know him. Maybe Paul knows him because they're neighbors up on the hill there. Mr. Kennedy's and his family have been here just a few years in Ferndale. Fred has a Bachelor of Science degree in Building Construction Technology from Purdue University. Mr. Kennedy has some 30 years experience in engineering, procurement, and construction, including work as a field engineer, contracts manager, project manager, facilities engineer, construction manager. Most importantly, Fred and his wife, who's with them today, Donna, live here in Ferndale. They're very committed to this community. They have 7 children, expecting number 8. Yes, they have trumped the Mutchlers. A couple of those girls are in Ferndale High School. They have a daughter, a senior year at Harvard. They have 2 children at Northern Arizona University and a community college student. So I'm really honored to introduce to this council Mr. Kennedy, who's sitting in the front row with his wife, Donna. And that's all I had today.
Can we get him to stand up so we can just give him an applause? Or want to speech or anything? We might hear him speak, and
I just noticed you were applauding again.
After he talks, we might,
You have to vote in that.
You're tall enough. You got to.
We're up there.
We haven't even voted on him yet. For all
you're
you
know. Mike. Well, John, I do want to thank you for the kind introduction. Thank you very much.
Sure, you can buy dinner later.
That's not appropriate. I
would
like that.
Easy enough. We do hope to be of good service here, and would very much appreciate an appointment to the Planning Commission.
Okay, Council, let's make this official. All in favor of this appointment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries 7-0. You're it.
No pressure.
Okay, I was asked to pull the PUD, City of Ferndale PUD agreement by a member of the PUD that wanted to come and hear that, and now he's not here. So we might as well go forward and say that I'm a man of my word. I chose to do it. So our city administrator will kind of summarize or read the agreement. Is that a press release, I guess?
Yeah, this is a press release that we've sat down with PUD and worked on that we're going to be releasing tomorrow. PUD, District Number 1 of Whatcom County, the City of Ferndale, have agreed to terms regarding the ending of the water supply agreement between the parties. Since the 1970s, the City of Ferndale received water from the PUD Number 1 for potable water service to city residents and customers. The PUD treated the water for the removal of sediments and pumped water to the city's treatment plant. The city then further treated the water to meet applicable state and federal drinking standards and distributing it to its customers. Beginning in January of 2012, the City of Ferndale returned to the well system as a sole source of its water supply. Over the years, the PUD has made substantial capital infrastructure investments for the sole benefit of its delivery of water to the City of Ferndale, and the city had paid a capital charge as part of its rates for facilities that would continue to benefit PUD customers after the city left the PUD system. With the ending of the water supply agreement, the city asked the PUD to review the history of the city's payments to the PUD for capital infrastructure, to determine if there was an appropriate refund to reflect the parties' respective investments, including stranded capital investments made by the PUD for the benefit of the city and capital investments that would remain with the PUD benefiting other PUD customers. Following several months of review and analysis, the city and the PUD have agreed that a $200,000 refund to the city would be reasonable. Ferndale Mayor Gary Jensen said, "We are grateful to the PUD for their efforts to work with the city to transition to our well system, and we recognize that the PUD has a responsibility to constantly improve their system. For this, they should be congratulated." Citing future economic development and recognizing the vital role the PUD plays in this effort countywide, including water planning efforts, electric supply, and other means to better the lives of the citizens, the city looks forward to continuing to work with the PUD in the future, Mr. Jensen said. It is gratifying we're able to come to a mutual agreement with PUD, and we intend to apply these funds for the continued improvement of our water delivery system.
Any questions? Councilor Zimmerman, you had some questions earlier, so and then we'll go to Councilperson Wetzler.
This is the first I've got to read this over, since all the negotiations going on.
Okay, and that's the settlement?
Settlement. And I was looking over this because I've all my time here. I was always curious what the relationship was.
Wait, can you talk?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. The way I looked at this is almost like a marriage contract as being the final papers of the divorce. And then I started reading it through it, not that I've ever been divorced, but and then only after complying with the provisions of Section 19L of the agreement, and I started looking down here and looking down here, and I got all the way to 15, but there is no 19L.
I think that's of the original agreement between the parties.
Is that available, or I'd feel comfortable looking at that original agreement before we, because if there's some sort of remedy, we're still kind of in that gray zone of whether or not we're really, really happy with our water supply, and if we need to go back with them to get a little bit more water, and what were the terms and conditions of the original contract. These are the type of things that I would be curious before I would. Of course, I saw Mike Murphy sneak in just now, member of the PUD. So,
yeah, it would be as Janice mentioned earlier. The city never had any technical water rights in the Nooksack. We were simply a customer of the PUD. We were one of their few potable water customers because the bulk of their water goes out to Cherry Point for the various industries, and they don't need the river water treated to the extent we did. And so our relationship with the PUD was a little unique insofar as we were that one residential potable water customer amongst the majority of which were the commercial customers out at Cherry Point. Since we didn't have any water rights to start with, we didn't give them up, so to speak, when we entered the relationship. We have, though, agreed that we would no longer be getting PUD water. Our contract allowed for an ultimate amount as well as an annual amount, and we've been modifying that over the years. Both of those amounts are now zero. And, in fact, there was a pipe that went between the PUD and our station and our water treatment facility. And if it hasn't been shut off and capped, it probably will be soon. And I guess the bigger situation, which may lead to further discussion, is the physical process by which we partially treated river water to fully treat it and put it into our system, the physical mechanisms, the machinery as well as the media that we use to treat the river water is different than the equipment that we now use to treat well water. Mm-hmm. I bring this up only because that as of right now, if we wanted to, and the PUD has been very open about the idea of inviting us back in if that's what we so feel like we would want to do. Right now, though, we would be physically unable to take the river water, treat it, and put it out into our system because we literally do not have the equipment inside our treatment plant that treats river water. All of our new filters and media treat well water. Our intention is to improve the well water, and we'll talk about that later on. And unless and until the council changes their minds, we've had no discussions with the PUD about returning to river water. And I don't see us going in that direction again unless there's a change of feelings on the part of this or a future council.
Mm-hmm. I just saw it as one of the things that we've done here in the last so many months is to do a blending of the wells and the different hardnesses and the pHs of the water. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that, you know, to leave the little crack in the door open, just to, if that may be the solution, I guess they're all amenable to it because they're a public entity.
Again, this is a very amenable, we've negotiated here for a while as far as the return of those, potentially some of those capital contributions because we were that unique customer, there were some future capital improvements that the PUD no longer has to contemplate completing. And so some of the rates we paid over the last couple of years, some of that money was intended to go towards those future capital needs, and with those no longer being needed, that was the basis for us to come up with the settlement and kind of ink the deal. But with that said, the PUD has always been very good to the city, and we've always had a very positive relationship, and I don't see that changing in the future.
That being said, Mr. Mayor, could I direct a question at Mike Murphy because he is here now?
If he agrees to. Mr. Murphy, would you like to come up?
Got your chance to run, Mike.
For the record, just state your name, please.
Mike Murphy, PUD Commissioner.
Yeah. Mike, looking back, and people ask me all the time, how did we get in this situation? Why are we making the change and stuff like that? And then I've asked some of the other council people. But what was kind of the, because to people in the audience, there's the three-person board that has a PUD, correct? Yourself, yes. And two other individuals. What was the thinking or rationale by the fairly steep increases in cost to the citizens of Ferndale that prompted our transition?
Some of the things that the PUD has dealt with over the years is not keeping up with our facilities. Our facilities were not kept up as they should have been. You understand facilities, you understand road improvements and everything else. If you don't keep up with those, then the cost is greater later on. The pay me now, pay me later. We did not keep up with our facilities. And so we bonded ourselves and went out and purchased, sold bonds, and are trying to bring our facilities up. At the same time, that also increased the costs on everybody, our customers and things too. Our relationship with the city, between the PUD and city, is it was unique, as it was said. There was things that we were doing for the city that we didn't for nobody else. We didn't have to bring the quality of the water to the point where you needed it. As industrial did not need it. So there was things that we were doing, too, that added to the cost. So I don't know if I – hopefully I kind of answered.
Yeah. Shortly. If I were to talk to my constituents, could I tell them that the industries would pay the same rate as we would? Or because we're unique, we had to pay some extra because we were receiving potable water?
You know, I can't really tell you what the industrial customers were paying compared to the city. I couldn't say if it was penny to penny or a few cents different right now. If I was to guess, because of the cost of the chemicals to treat the water, there probably was more cost to the city of Ferndale due to the chemicals that we purchased. So there probably was more.
Okay. Well, that just helps me ask, be a better representative by answering those questions. Thank you.
Two hands up, Councilperson Mutchler, and then Councilperson Watson. Are there questions for Mr. Murphy, or can he sit down?
He can sit down.
Actually, my question, I thought we were getting off topic of what we were discussing. I just was wondering if we were still on that topic, because we're still talking about the settlement, right?
We are still.
Theoretically, we're still.
We're still on it, but you have a rare occasion of having a PUD commissioner in front of you that's willing to answer questions.
An elected official.
As long as they're germane to the
discussion. So, not related to Mr. Murphy, can sit down? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Murphy.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a motion that the council adopt the agreement with PUD1, and with my thanks to the PUD for supplying city water for decades, and my thanks to staff for negotiating this settlement. I know it's been a lot of work, and I'd like to see us pass it tonight.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, Councilperson Watson, that you were getting us back on task.
Yes. Try.
Okay, any further discussion on this? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Okay, the next one was the fee code. Councilperson Zimmerman, you asked that to be pulled, so
yeah.
We're going to give the floor to you.
A little quick discussion on it. I think with some of the things that we as a council are doing to try to help foster development, employment, small businesses, all these things, I just think that just a blanket 4%, which over a period of time, it's 4% of something you've already raised, 4%, it has a compounding effect. I think with some of the cutbacks that we have taken on with development costs, that I would make a motion that we freeze it for this year, just as a show of this is what we're doing to help businesses, and it's 4%. But those death by 1,000 cuts of small little fees and costs and everything else, they just add up for a lot of folks. And next year, guess what? It's going to be another 4%. The year after that, another 4%. So rather than just an automatic rubber stamp 4% every year, year after year, I think that we should take a breather on this and not do it this year.
Point of order. I didn't think we were voting on COLA.
Well, let's go to the clerk, because I think there is some confusion.
confused there. So
well,
we have a motion
without a second. So.
Exactly.
I didn't see him.
Just for clarification, there is no ordinance in front of the council regarding cost of living adjustments. That's not before the council. The council is related to other staff recommended changes to the fee code relating to utility billing charges. And the finance director could speak more directly to those details.
So to clarify things for myself, Sam, is there an ordinance on the book that says that we will raise fees 4% every year?
No.
Okay. I'm mistaken then.
Can you explain how we're doing it?
Sure. Just to clarify, there is, in a separate ordinance approved by council, in the fee code, different items are listed, and they have a little code next to them, a little capital V in the left-hand column. And then on the footer of each page, it explains what that little V means. It means these are subject to cost of living increases, Seattle CPIW, October to October. And this year, it's going up 2.3% in January. That's in a separate ordinance. Certainly, council could reconsider that separate ordinance, but tonight in front of you are just a few items that are not subject to COLA that are staff is recommending adjustment.
Okay. Thanks for that clarification.
So if you want to go that direction, two different. So on the D code that you have before you in your council minutes, Councilperson Metzler?
I move the adoption of the D code ordinance as was given to us in the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay, let's move and second. Further discussion on that issue? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries 6-1 with Councilperson Zimmerman voting no. Okay, next up on our agenda is the public hearing on the 2013 budget adopted ordinance. Lots of workshops, lots of work, and we're down to this. Finance Director, Mr. Pierce.
Good evening, Council, Mr. Mayor, staff. Tab C of your packet outlines the 2013 operating budget. As the mayor mentioned, we've been working on this with you since September, and I'd like to highlight some items that we've come to that affect next 2013's operating budget. Our assumption was a slow, modest economic recovery. Also, the second item for the streets fund to remain solvent, the solid waste utility tax is heavily used to subsidize the streets fund. The only major source of revenue in the streets fund is gasoline tax. It's way less than half of the needs of the street fund ongoing. Again, we're deferring sidewalk and road maintenance programs. Now, we can probably resurrect those with TBD sales tax monies and perhaps later, if council so chooses and the voters so choose, the penny board of gas tax, which would be used for roads. No vehicle purchases, except we did, council did approve a fourth water treatment plant operator, including a pickup truck. Council did approve an 18th commissioned police officer, effective approximately March of 2013. Most of that funding came from the 3% property tax increase y'all approved. We did sustain, it's one of these challenges, we did sustain a $57,000 loss from liquor tax and liquor profits. That will be restored in 2014, but due to the quirks in the initiative, we're losing $57,000 next year. The medical insurance is an ongoing challenge. Worst case, we're seeing a $40,000 increase in the general fund just for medical and dental insurance. I think dental is zero. We continue a relatively new thing, wetlands mitigation monitoring. This is where when we do some off-site wetlands mitigation due to road projects, we have to monitor those wetlands, and that's a general fund expenditure, not a storm fund, not a storm customer expenditure. It's something we have to cover in the general fund. An example is over at the softball fields. We've got a wetlands and mitigation monitoring, as well as Vandergat. Another challenge is, looks like we're losing the federal funding, federal grants for our domestic violence consultant, $60,000. Now, we hope some of that funding is restored, but effective next year, we can't afford that good work of the domestic violence consultant. And as I mentioned, Council did approve a fourth water treatment plant operator effective approximately February of 2013. So I brought a few copies for the public here of the 2013 operating fund budget, as well as a six-year look ahead. I'll leave them up here. And I'm done with my speech. Unless there's some questions, I'll sit down.
Okay, questions of staff. This is a public hearing, so we'll open the public in a couple minutes. Councilor Goodrich?
I had a question on the gasoline tax, and I don't know if you're able to answer this or not. But when I was over at Pilot the other day, I noticed they had two prices of diesel. The price for at the cars was like $4-something, but over where the trucks filled up, it was $2-something.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
And I was wondering
I don't have an answer.
What the difference was. It had something about something, you know, a DFE or something.
Is it the grade of diesel, perhaps?
Yeah, grade. I assume it's
dirtier.
Grade,
well, I thought there's only one grade of diesel anymore. They did away with some of the grades.
Councilperson Ingram, looks like you might have an answer for that.
Yeah, all of the diesel being sold currently in the United States, according to Marjorie Hatter, is low sulfur, level 4, I think they call it, diesel. It doesn't make a bit of difference what you're putting it in. The difference in the price at the pump, the cars pay one price. Interstate trucking pays another price.
Huh.
It has to do with the interstate commerce regulations. They get a discount because if they can prove their load is going out of state. If they're strictly an in-state truck, they're supposed to fill up where the cars do. Not very many of them probably do, but, yeah, it's kind of an honor system, but that's the price difference. This is the interstate trucking.
Well, my question was leading to then the tax. Are we getting the tax on the diesel like we're getting on the gas state?
We can look into that. It probably won't impact tonight's budget.
Right.
But I'll
but if they're selling a lot of diesel there,
and they
we're not getting anything for it.
Well, we talked about before. I mean, the gas tax goes to Olympia, and we beg to have ours come back. And we've talked about that, and that's a long,
very limited
story
yes,
with different opinions. So any more questions of staff? Okay, this is a public hearing, so a public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in the decision-making process. The intended speaker is necessary to sign at the sign-up sheet on the counter located in front, or if not, just raise your hand and we'll allow you to speak. Written comments will also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed to the speaker's rostrum from the microphone. Clearly state your name, address. If you're speaking as a representative of another person or organization, so state. State whether you're opponent or neither. Limit your comments to 3 minutes. After all comments are heard, if you have something to add that has already been stated, at the discretion of the mayor, you may be given an additional 2 minutes. There will be no demonstration during or at the conclusion of anyone's presentation. During the public testimony period of the public hearing, the council, staff, and audience will remain silent. After your presentation, council members may wish to ask you questions. At the last person spoken, the hearing will be closed and the council will enter into regular session. The subject hearing will usually appear as an agenda item for council discussion, decision, or referral. The audience may not comment during the council's deliberations unless questioned by the council for clarification. These rules are intended to promote an orderly system of holding a public hearing to give every person an opportunity to be heard and ensure that no one, individuals are embarrassed by exercising their right to free speech. So at 6:39:14, we'll open up the public hearing. Would anyone in the audience like to speak on the budget tonight? Everybody's enthused and excited. Okay, at 6:39:27, we'll close the public hearing. And I saw a hand up. Councilperson Mutcher, I think, was first, with Councilperson Hansen next.
Yeah, I was really pleased how the budget work went this year, and I thank Mr. Peterson for doing a great job of explaining this all to us. Lots and lots of numbers, and it all balances that with, I think, $8,000 or $9,000 extra. So I'd like to make a motion that Council adopts Agenda Bill 1212-002, the budget for 2013.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Further discussion by Council? Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, I like 99.99% of this, and as everybody else would have maybe differences. My only concern was I checked with Mr. Peterson. We at one time funded Left One at about $100,000 a year, and we've cut that down to 50 or 60.
Yeah, 60.
Yeah, and I noticed that we're at about almost $300,000 above our required or preferred reserve. So I do hope to come back to Council in February to see if we can help that Left One fund at that time. Other than that, it looks really good to me.
Question we haven't talked about is Left, once it goes into Left Fund, it stays there?
No, it's not a restricted fund. Okay. It's not a reserve fund either.
So we can feed an emergency, we can pull in and out. Okay. Okay, any further discussion on the budget? Seeing no further discussion, here's the big vote of the night. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. A 7-0 vote on the budget. That's significant.
We did that.
Okay. Big subject of the night. Contract. Water softening alternatives consultant. Our public works director would love to talk about this subject.
Good evening, Council, Mayor, and staff. I'm seeking Council approval to award a contract to Wilson Engineering for a water softening alternatives analysis. I'm still working out a few details on the scope of work. We're just kind of going over the minor details, but the dollar amount of the contract will not exceed the $30,000, as indicated in the staff report. Question?
Okay, Councilperson Mutchler.
Thank you, Janice. My only question is, and I think Councilmember Olson sort of hinted at this recently, if we should allow more time to go by to see how things settle out down there underground before we make conclusions based on an analysis at this time. Is this going to be accurate for us?
The mayor aggressively disagrees with that course of action.
Because I don't get the phone call.
Some of you council have admitted that typically when you walk down the street and you hear a complaint, it's nice that your response is, why don't you call the mayor? Or why don't you write a letter to the mayor? And so the mayor basically, on an average, averages about a complaint a day. Some are, four or five, some are none. But the mayor disagrees with your course of action of doing nothing at this time because there are citizens that are really not satisfied with the quality of our water. But just my...
Well, it was actually a question, Mayor, is whether we can get an accurate picture. I'm not saying do nothing, that.
Yeah, and I'll answer. And at this time, we do have enough information that we could move forward on this analysis.
That's all I need. Thank you.
Councilperson Olson, not that you would ever say, oh, there's something bad, call the mayor.
No, and that swayed my vote. But I wanted to point out that everybody needs to know this is not the same crew that did the first one. So we're not giving them more money to give us more bad information. This was a whole fresh look, fresh set of eyes.
Very good point. Councilperson Goodrich and then Hanson.
My question is in the scoping aspect of it. How are we going to set the deliverable? What are we going to look at? Say, well, gee, we want the exact same water we had from the river, or how do we know that these improvements delivered what we asked them to deliver? It's kind of the water tasting thing is kind of a subjective. Yeah, it's not good, but what is good? And how are we going to set up a contract to say, fix the, well, it's not this good, but we want it good? When do we know it's good?
So on the water hardness, so we have the water hardness of we're dealing with the surface water. So that's what we're going to kind of use to kind of shoot for with the for the groundwater. At least that's a good starting point. So we take a look at that first and see what it will take, what it will cost to get to that hardness level. And then you know, maybe that might be too expensive, so we have to look, okay, well, if we increase it by, you know, a certain amount, will that still be acceptable? And, you know, then how much will that cost? So that there's going to probably be a couple steps in looking at that and an acceptable water hardness level based on looking at the cost.
In the end, it's going to be the council looking at the information and kind of deciding.
Right.
Because you're going to decide what system we go with.
How much we're willing to pay.
Councilperson Hansen, yeah. And then Councilperson Ingram.
What we're going to get. Yeah.
As a council person who has, in fact, referred the public to the mayor, I want to clarify, though, that I first discussed it thoroughly with the couple of individuals and I'm not even sure they did call the mayor because I gave them a lot of information. I'm going to move that we accept this water softening contract.
Second.
And then I'd like to speak to it.
Okay. You have the floor, and then we'll go to Councilperson Ingram.
There's a whole bunch of unanswered questions that we hope this is going to answer. We can speculate on taste of water. We can speculate on hardness of water. These are all things that we're going to hopefully get answered by Wilson Engineering. And it's going to have a price tag with it. If you want the water this soft, this is how much it's going to cost. If you can put up with it being a little bit more hard, it'll cost this much less. Those are none of us are experts at this point. We're all scratching our head wondering how we got to this point, I'm sure. The one thing, and what I explain to people who call me, returning to river water is not an option. It's an extremely expensive ordeal. If we were to go back to the river water, we don't have the right. We have to go back and buy it from the PUD. My understanding is about a $5 million infrastructure need in order to build settling ponds, plus the cost of the raw water, et cetera, et cetera. And we still have to pay off all of the well costs. So it would be so expensive, we'd have a whole different group of people calling the mayor. We may have to seek it may be necessary to get some revenue source to pay for this system. It's not currently there. We have a couple hundred thousand to start with, though. So we'll just leave it at that.
Councilperson Ingram?
Well, in all due fairness to the first set of eyes that looked at these problems, they looked at at the hardness issue of this water from our well system during a 48-72-hour pump-down test, which is a pretty standard procedure for any well system. And to find fault with their findings at this point after we've been on it for the better part of a year. In fact, I think we're all really close to our first anniversary, maybe even past it. I think it's kind of not fair to them. I don't know. I keep hearing all the horror stories about the water. I came out of my sink about an hour and 15 minutes ago. Tastes great to me. I find my water at my house better than the river water ever was because I don't taste like I'm sticking a straw in a swimming pool, thank you. So I don't know. I don't understand some of the complaints. It seems to me like this issue varies from section of the city to the section of the city almost at random. In my mind, what's left of it at this age tells me that it's not the water per se. It's something else going on here. We've got something in the infrastructure that is creating a problem in certain pockets of the city. Because if the water at my house, and I live right up at the top of the hill, is great, and I mean, I love it. I don't even have to filter it when I bake anymore to get the chlorine out of it. Because chlorine kills yeast, for any of you folks that ever have tried to bake yeast doughs. And I don't even have to filter it to bake with anymore. So, I mean, to me, the water is phenomenal. And yet I hear from people that say, you can't drink it. It's absolutely undrinkable. Something else is going on there. I can't believe that there's a difference in the water itself from down here to up there.
Well, you are true, and you know, we talked at one time in the committee in terms of tracking how there are complaints, but they're all over, and I don't doubt that, you know, some people are aggressively affected. Councilperson Goodrich and I, you know, talked to a gentleman last week who, you know, thought it was just a giant conspiracy, and Councilperson Goodrich was way faster at moving away from the gentleman than I was, leaving me behind to handle
it. I recommend him to talk to the mayor.
His house is right there.
And here he is.
Right in front of him. But, you know, I mean, I believe his, you know, I mean, I don't think he was making up that, and I've been to people's homes, you know, I've been to my own mother's home. I mean, it is odd, but I guess that's part of what the study is. I mean, so I don't want to discount the fact, or I don't want the press to pick up on the fact that some people are having giant problems with our water.
I'm not heaters
to boiler systems. I mean, so not just taste. I want to get away with taste. Is hardness is a real problem. I mean, it leaves a residue. It's difficult for certain equipment, coffee shops, industrial boilers. It really is an effect. This isn't just a, ooh, I don't like it, and so I'm going to switch from Pepsi to Coke. It isn't that. I mean, the problem is real, and I've seen it for myself. So that's a solution. You know, we're going to come to some sort of solution to help that. So, you know, I want to discount that factor. You know, I don't want to give the impression that we think it's just a personal opinion. No, it isn't. It's a real thing in some households. Why it's different in certain parts of the city, Janice doesn't know. We're still researching that. But I am going to go backwards. I mean, the customer that was so upset with Brent is like a lot of people in the fact that his discussion was, why did you do this if you knew you had a problem? And both Councilperson Goodrich and I were the same response. We didn't know we had a problem. We thought it was going to work out good. Our test showed that. And, boy, that's when the discussion got heated. Well, I don't believe you. I think you're complete liars. And it's like, well, why would we do this? Why would we switch when we're going to make people mad? That isn't our objective. I don't know anyone on the council would go, yes, let's make a decision that's really going to make everybody in the world mad. It was just odd, and after a while, it's like, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to walk away from you, sir, and he yelled at me as I walked away. So, you know, and if that's the fault of the consultant and why we switched consultant, no, but I think it's a proper move tonight to have a different set of eyes look at this problem as we go a different direction. So I think staff made a very wise move in that direction, and I don't think we're saying anything terrible at First Consultant, but I think it's ready for a different set of eyes because they stood right where Janice was when one of you counsel said, did you know there was a problem? Why is there a problem? We don't know. You're not fix it. We don't know. And, you know, it's like, well, you know, so there's a certain amount you have to you know, kind of carry that shoulder too. Councilperson Watson?
I just wondering, so this won't cover, like, mapping where the problems are, because it does seem like people are complaining in different neighborhoods, so this will just be talking about there's a hardness coming out of the well, and we're going to deal with how we would deal with that, not necessarily neighborhood by neighborhood.
But we can look at the city. We just don't, I mean, people would call in. They wouldn't necessarily leave their number or their address, so it was difficult to have, you know, any kind of complete record. Okay. But just based on the information that we do have, and plus we can have a discussion with maintenance staff. Mm-hmm. You know, we can take a look at that and, you know, look into it and see if there is some kind of pattern.
Okay.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
Janice, let's get to the bottom line, the money. How did you come up with $30,000, and when do they get it, and it's installments, and if they just walk out the door and come back and says, you need a Culligan water softener, boom, give me $30,000. How's it set up?
Well, the 30, it's not a lump sum amount. It's just based on actual hours worked. And so we just, once they bill us for hours worked, and then we pay them. So this here is just a, you know, talking about their preliminary scope of work, going back and forth, you know, just an
estimate. And what is the scope of work, I guess? The work breakdown structure of what you might ask for?
Yeah, and we're still going over details on that. But basically, I mean, they will be preparing, they'll be identifying and evaluating several alternatives. This information will be discussed at either the committee or a study session in front of the full council. We're also going to have an open house. And so they are going to have to look pretty thoroughly in all the, into the different alternatives, do a cost-benefit analysis, look at pros and cons. If we make one change to our the water treatment process, it could also have an impact on our wastewater treatment process. So that's what's nice about having Wilson involved, because they're very familiar with our wastewater treatment. And we also have to, you know, if we make some other kind of chemical change, there could be some other chemical change going on. So it gets pretty complicated. And so there's a lot of research and review and analysis in this process.
Agreed. And what I've been backing the mayor up and coming to your support, Gary, was that we just experienced one of the longest, driest stretches in my lifetime up in Northwest, of like almost 84 days of no rain. And as Paul was saying, when you start really sucking on that aquifer, you're going to get some stuff down there that it has been down there for a long time. So we're like cleaning the whole aquifer out or pulling that out. But now that the rain's come back, it's a little bit different. But it's the weather was beyond our mayor's control. So I'm supportive of it. I'm just arguing about the price.
Okay, any further discussion before we vote?
No.
Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying
aye.
Thank you.
Opposed? Motion carries.
That's why we love him.
About that, huh?
No, we don't want to talk about it. No. Okay, next up, this is purely informational. I think the audience will enjoy this.
Did he bring samples?
What's that?
Did he bring samples? No brownies?
It's still a legal calendar.
Oh, what day is this?
So three days.
You got three days.
I have a gavel now. Children, be quiet. I'm sure a lot of people have questions about this all around the state. I asked the police chief, who's attended a couple meetings on it, what does 502 mean? What does it mean to Ferndale? What are they going to do? No, he's not going to hand out samples, but can go outside and start smoking right
home
away.
Where is the evidence, chief?
So we're going to turn over to our police chief. The students really didn't believe you as our police chief when they took the chair. Now we're going to let him. Welcome, chief.
Good evening, council, mayor. And I don't mean to put my back to you. I'm sorry. I'll try to do this.
He's on planning commission. He'll take your property.
I know with your deep voice you probably don't need this thing.
Tonight I would like to discuss some of the issues that are related to some recent legislation regarding the use of marijuana recreationally and medically. And we're going to discuss the issues because there's simply, at this point, no answers. To understand 502, you must understand Senate Bill, engrossed substitute Senate Bill, 5073, which was enacted back in July of 2011. And then you must also understand the initiative that was, I think, brought forward in 2009, which was 692. 692, this dates back to 2009, recognized in this state that marijuana had medical implications. And it discussed what a patient was, what the conditions were, and who could recommend the use. Nothing more was really done with that initiative until we found 5073. And what that did was give some body to how a medical marijuana could be used and regulated. First off, what it did is it defined the conditions that medical marijuana could be used for. And essentially they were intractable pain, glaucoma, Crohn's disease, nausea, and vomiting. It defined what a patient was. A qualified patient was a person who went to a qualified health care provider and received a recommendation that marijuana could or may be a benefit to his condition. And it described what a healthcare provider was. It was a naturopath. It was an osteopath. It was a physician. It was a nurse's assistant. It was an assistant to an osteopath. They had to be licensed by the state. And it said that for a person 18 years or older, that person, if given written documentation by a qualified patient based on a written document recommending the use of marijuana, the provider could grow marijuana for that patient. If he was also a patient, he could have twice the amount that a patient alone could have. And the amount was determined to be a 60-day supply. The Department of Health was given the responsibility to determine what is a 60-day supply. So they actually went to a federal authorized study and found out it was something like 8.93 grams per day. And they came out with a 60-day supply being 24 ounces. Now, at this point, and you know more about this than I because I've forgotten most, there are 16 ounces in a pound. There are 28 grams in an ounce. A gram is about what a cigarette has. In fact, by law, I think the cigarette has 0.8 of a gram. So if you want to know what a gram looks like, it looks like the tobacco in a cigarette. For the patient, then, he could have 24 ounces of what they call usable marijuana. Usable. 60 days. Now, if he was a provider as well as a patient, he could have 48. He could also have 15 plants. The plants were defined. They had to be at least a plant with three leaves. And the stems had to be at least three millimeters in circumference. You couldn't have more than 15 plants. If you did, the law provided that when the police came, you got to select which 15 plants you were going to give up if there were more than 15. You could retain the 15 plants you wanted, in other words.
Keep your favorite children.
Now, the law also provides for certain prohibitions about the regulation by individuals regarding the use of marijuana. I'm getting ahead of myself. So medical marijuana, here we are. We know that we can have 24 ounces. We can have 15 plants. And 5073 says that we can grow it individually and that we can grow it collectively. Now, collectively means that you can have 10 qualified patients who have 10 qualified recommendations from 10 qualified health care providers saying they could benefit. Those 10 may share the expense of raising the marijuana. You're each entitled to 15 plants, but under the law, collective gardens may not have any more than 3 times the individual amount at any one time. In other words, you could have 10 people, but there couldn't be more than 45 plants. You could have 24 ounces of usable marijuana per person, 240 for 10, but the law says you may actually only have 72 ounces of usable marijuana on that site. That's the medical marijuana law. You can grow it individually, you can grow it collectively, and you can use it if you have a recommendation that it may benefit based on these list of conditions. You have to be 18 years old to be a provider. That means if you were to grow for yourself or another, you must be 18 years old. You can be any age as a patient. And you've read it in the paper where a parent is giving their 5 or 6-year-old marijuana. The law simply says that if a person under 18 has a medically qualified recommendation, that the dosage and the frequency must be up to the parent. Now, comes along 502. Before, as a medical patient, you had what they call an affirmative defense. If you were charged by the police, you were arrested and charged for possession of more than the qualifying amounts, more than 24 ounces, more than 15 planes. You had an affirmative defense if you were below those numbers. 502 decriminalized those provisions. So now you cannot be arrested. So 502 did this, and this is why you have to understand 5073 to understand 502. If you're 21 years or over, and you possess 1 ounce or less, you may not be arrested. It is not a crime. You may not be arrested. It is, however, illegal at this point to grow it because the state will not have its regulations in place until 12/1/2013 that regulate the sale, the processing, and the cultivation of marijuana. 502, unlike 5073, does not authorize individual growth. It authorizes state licensing of cultivation and state sale. So today, a person can possess 1 ounce, if they're 21 years or older, of marijuana that they could not legally buy anywhere because there's no one that can legally sell it. So the only person, the only way they could have gotten it, of course, is to cultivate it themselves, and they can't under 502. So they must be a medical patient. That means they must have this documentation. The documentation is that you be a qualified health care professional listed, a naturopath, physician, nurse's assistant, whatever, tamper-proof paper signed and dated by the professional stating that you may benefit from the use of marijuana for this condition. It's good for a year. If you don't have that and you have more than 1 ounce, you fall under the general proscriptions against possessing marijuana. The big issue actually came with how 502 impacts DUI. That's the most contested part. Today, if you drive a motor vehicle under the influence of alcohol, there is a per se finding that if your blood contains 0.08 alcohol per milliliter, you are driving while intoxicated. We also today arrest people for driving while under the influence of something other than alcohol because we look at your impairment and we bring out a drug recognition officer and we say it's apparently not alcohol once you blow into the breathalyzer, but you are under something else. And the drug recognition officer will draw some conclusions as to what drug you are under. But this law, 502, now sets a presumption just as it does for alcohol. It's 5 nanograms of tetrahydrocannabinol. So if you have 5 nanograms of THC in your blood, you are presumed to be driving while intoxicated. There is an implied consent just like for alcohol. If the officer stops you because you seem to be exhibiting the behaviors of a person that is driving distracted while possibly under the influence of drugs or alcohol, and you go down and the only way to test for THC, we have to all become phlebotomists. We have to take you to the hospital and have your blood drawn.
Do we pay for that?
I have no idea. I have no idea. There is so much left of how this is going to work. There is a whole industry, I'm sure, right now trying to figure out a breathalyzer for THC. because of the implications, without going into too much of this in open session, it's all a matter of public knowledge, but marijuana dissipates very quickly. So we need to have tests that will verify right now that that's in your blood. We can, with alcohol, extrapolate backwards because there is a calculus now that you will burn X amount of alcohol, metabolize it per hour, and the law recognizes that by extrapolating it backwards, although it was 3 hours after this, your level was this. There is no such thing now for marijuana. So, here we have the condition that you may use marijuana. It's defined specifically in the law what marijuana is. It must be the cannabis species, and it must contain 0.03 THC. It's not sativa or an indica. It can be either of the two. It can be a hybrid of the two. But if it meets the...
What are those?
The two breeds of cannabis.
Okay.
There are breeds.
Yes. And now they're hybrids, and the person who cultivates the indica is the most preferred, and the female of the indica is the most preferred. Once pollinated, the marijuana plant ceases to produce THC. So now through hydroponics and sophisticated cultivation, high-intensity lights, manicuring, removing the leaves, letting the THC go to the buds, you can get very high potency THC marijuana. It's doubled in the last 25 years. But in any event, so we have, as of Thursday, a 21-year-old is entitled to have 1 ounce of marijuana on him. He could not have legally bought it, could not have legally grown it, but somehow it's legal to possess it.
It found.
The marijuana fairy.
Found.
So, then you have to revert to 5073. And 5073 has some implications, and I can tell you, having talked to Sam, there's probably no person more qualified to examine the HR aspects of marijuana use than Sam. And I've talked to Yori, and there is no one more qualified to discuss the zoning regulation of marijuana grows than that individual, because they have a number of issues. Since we know that you can grow marijuana, because 5073 says you may, individually and collectively, then it falls upon the city to determine where that might happen. And so competent counsel and the wisdom of our planning director and the advice of counsel will determine how that scheme plays out. The HR implications, and I've learned much just talking to Sam, you know, the use of marijuana in the federal drug-free workplace, of course, is disallowed. And if you receive federal funds that are tied to a federal drug-free workplace, then you would jeopardize continuing receiving federal funding if you were to allow marijuana use. But you may, aside from even the federal drug-free workplace rules, prohibit the use of those substances, alcohol and drugs, in your workplace, and they're entirely supported and not impacted by this law specifically. The law says those rules continue. In fact, I think, and Sam told me, that the Supreme Court has, and I've looked it up, the Supreme Court in Washington has said, in fact, you may be discharged or you may not be hired properly if you have used marijuana, whether it's on site, during hours, after hours, and it's contrary to your policy. So there are implications about how and that will be administered, how it could be tested. Much of the provisions of 5073 out of the 61 sections, I think, most of them, as you remember, 38, I think, were vetoed. They were vetoed because they had to do with dispensaries and the licensing of dispensaries. There is no such thing as a licensed dispensary. We've had people inquire now in our city about opening up a dispensary. It is against state law, but most importantly, the state is concerned because it's against federal law. The sale, the cultivation, the processing, possession of marijuana is a federal crime. So the governor vetoed all those issues regarding dispensaries. So the regulations also pose issues for local government. If you were to regulate it, you are in effect aiding and abetting. And the federal government could, unlikely will, but might determine you're in violation of federal law. They allowed dispensaries in cities across the country, including Seattle. Under the Ogden memo of 2009, they simply said resources can be better spent than to go after qualified patients who are using marijuana according to 5073. And a couple of years later, they went after those dispensaries and closed them down. But then they found that there was money laundering and that they were not complying with the law. So there's no assurance of what the federal government will do. So these are indeed interesting times. There's a whole taxing scheme for these that goes on for pages. It is like the alcohol scheme. It regulates from the production to the middleman processor to the retailer, 25% of the retail price. And that's in addition to whatever sales tax, business tax that you may, what it ultimately is going to sell for, something around $12 to $15 a gram, they think, will be the retail price. How are they going to package it? No one's quite sure. They're talking about putting a stamp on it. It's against the law to smoke it. Originally under 692 in a place that prohibited smoking. Under 5073, it's against the law to smoke it, to display it in any public place.
Just for a second, I mean, maybe somebody on this can help me. What is the, so $15 for basically one cigarette, what's the cost of one tobacco cigarette?
I don't know, like 40 cents. Like $6 a pack?
Yeah. 40 cents. It's about $8 a pack.
Yeah.
20 in a pack.
There's 20 in a pack, so. It's just cheaper to smoke.
So about 40 cents for a cigarette, but easily $15 a cigarette? Wow. Okay. Thank you.
So, stick with beer. The issue is obviously very much in its formative stages. I know there's a lot of preemptive thinking on the issue, particularly as it comes to planning, and Yuri and I have spoken about that in terms of land, secondary land impacts, and how that might be grandfathered in, whether you could in fact do something before regulations are set. We don't hear that somehow would work against us if then we later on tried to regulate it. The issue is that we will face are these. There's some law enforcement implications, and I think we can work those through. But the law says if you can grow it, you can grow it in your home. You can grow it on private property. You could grow it collectively on private property. Doesn't say anything about screening, and it has nothing about buffer zones, so that without regulation you could have people growing marijuana next to the Boys and Girls Club, next to your churches, next to anybody. Collective farms could then start to join. There's nothing prohibiting collective farms from bringing together a collective enterprise where you would have four or five collective farms. So the issues are going to be challenging. The proponents of 5073, when the dispensaries fell, said they're coming back next session and try to clarify some other issues and push for the sale. Colorado, as you know, they passed medical, and they provide for the private growth and cultivation. We do not. There is the state of the law.
Any questions? Councilperson Olson first, then Watson.
So we still have two sets of rates, one for the medical and then one for this 502?
Yes.
But neither allows these dispensaries?
Correct.
I know we don't have any here, but such as the one out of Pole Road and the Guide?
Absolutely not allowed by law.
Okay. But it's still there. But it's, of course, not in our jurisdiction.
None. And they had them all over Seattle.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden they didn't. And that's an issue now, certainly, as to the not only their proliferation, but even if they were to comply with the law and the federal government was not to become involved, as they promised them in the Ogden memo, at some point, if the scheme for your city and its zoning runs into conflict with what you have now allowed to occur, although you could not license this thing previously, now that you could license them now, but you then are faced with this idea that you may be bound by these establishments having been grandfathered in.
I thought 502 was going to supersede.
No, it doesn't. No, 5073 says this enhances 692, and 502 has nothing to do with 5073. One is recreational and one is medical. Two different laws.
Thank you.
Same marijuana.
Councilperson Watson.
Okay, so you can't legally open a dispensary now.
You may not legally open a dispensary.
But if someone did open a dispensary, they would be grandfathered in for the point when we said they couldn't.
That could possibly be, and that would be a question for Yori. That's we've had inquiries here, and the answer has been you will be arrested.
Okay. I'm just wondering, I mean, can you write an ordinance that says we will not allow pot dispensaries within the city limits? Sure. Because you can't, because it's already illegal. We're saying you
right.
can't do an illegal thing even if
right.
it becomes legal.
And that's the issue that, you know, that Yori will know
right.
about. And there's the opportunities for moratorium that allow you to stay for 6 months and renewable for 6 months. You know, let's study this because there's a lot of conflicting ideas. I've read some legal opinions from local attorneys that are going to various cities that are not entirely consonant with each other. So it's very speculative as to the impacts of all this.
And I also had a question for the sales tax. Does that all go to the state, or will we get our 0.2%?
No, the excise tax and all of that goes to a general marijuana fund, state operation.
You didn't touch on that.
Excise
tax. Now, it will be sold in state liquor stores.
Well,
until
state licensed stores.
Well,
until the next initiative,
state liquor control board will have authority over.
They're the ones. They set the regulations by the 12-1-13.
Correct.
Talking with these people today, with the licensing people, our liquor people, what they're doing is putting RFPs out now for experts so that they. Because this is a seminal
issue. You probably could
issue.
Give them some names.
And trying to figure out how is this system going to work precisely? And
so
how is it going to be packaged?
I'm confused.
So is everybody.
Right outside our door on the sidewalk, there's a person consuming a 1 gram marijuana cigarette right now. What happens?
It's right at this point, it would be illegal. Not on 12-6. It changes. Thursday, it changes.
Okay, so Friday night, corner of 3rd and Main.
The law says that you may not smoke public in the public.
In the public.
Secondhand smoke. You know,
yeah. How exactly do we know, because it requires probable cause, And rightly so, Sam, correct me, it takes reasonable suspicion on the HR level to require a test of an employee mm-hmm. to determine whether he's using, misusing the drug. But for the police officer, it takes probable cause. So when we stop you and we say, I believe you're under and you're coming with me for a breathalyzer, he has probable cause to arrest you right then. And he takes you for, you may or may not blow the .08. That's it. But he has to have probable cause at that point.
But if you have the marijuana cigarette, but you don't have a note from your doctor, you are breaking the law. So
Now you can just recreationally smoke marijuana. You don't have to be a medical patient.
I misunderstood that.
Right.
Yeah, I'm getting
you just around. Can't buy it legally. You
right.
can
buy it legally, but you can smoke it legally.
Right. Well, you can smoke it. But the issue is, yeah.
Thank God for initiatives.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not in public.
Because that would be wrong.
Chief, you mentioned the Ogden memo. I assume that was like an FBI.
No, it was a DEA. It was a
Department of Justice.
Department of Justice.
And it was kind of hands off.
It was. It was the Ogden memo went, I think, to Seattle, but then it was a general state, a national level disclaimer by the government.
What events, in your mind at least, what thinking, what changed for them to say, never mind, we're going to come in and.
Well, what they saw with 692 and the coming of 5073, there was a general acceptance on the use of marijuana, and people were concerned, the proponents, as they moved this thing forward. We got the United States Attorney, the head of the Seattle FBI office, you got Rick Steves, they're all pushing for marijuana. And so the current administration said, well, the fact is, if you have a medical marijuana law, 5073, and you are complying with it, and they didn't say we're going to abandon enforcement. They simply said we have better use of our resources than to go after patients that are complying with that law. The proponents then took it, well, I wonder if we can't enlarge that to mean, well, if you can use it, you must be able to sell it, get it somewhere. So they started opening the dispensaries. Then the federal government came down on them, and the proponents were very chagrined. And they wrote letters in protest that this somehow was an abandonment of the Ogden principle. And but the government's and the government has already told Gregoire, you know, we are examining this issue now. I suspect they're going to say what they said before, that the medical use of marijuana now in Colorado as well, as long as you're complying with the requirements of that. And there's no, they were concerned about money laundering. As long as you're complying with that, we probably will not go after the users or the providers.
So there won't be dispensaries in the future? There'll be state marijuana stores like there were
for
state
recreational.
Liquor stores? Okay. But there will still be dispensaries for medical? Or you would just go to the state liquor store? And
well, you could go to the state liquor store.
Why go to a dispensary if you can just buy it at a liquor store?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. So
but why would you pay $12 a gram if you could grow it?
If you could grow it
so people, that's the, if you have medical marijuana, there's 363,000 people under medical marijuana in this state, they predict. Using medical marijuana.
Presently?
Yeah.
We're sickly measure. It's the weather.
And so there's a lot of confusion.
Yeah.
About this.
So, again, okay. The state has told us they won't have distribution channel or the production channel.
12-113.
All of 2013.
Yeah, and probably not this.
Probably not. The law. Also, any other questions for the chief? I thought you'd find this all interesting. And Mr. Zimmerman?
Yeah. Chief, of course, I get in this argument with some people and some of the people that are very pro-marijuana are down on it, and I know, whatever. But you mentioned two species of marijuana. There's another whole field, pardon the pun, of industrial hemp. I'm in nutrition, and I can go to the store, you know, health food store, and get shelled hemp seed. It tastes like pine nuts. They're really tiny little things. Where is it? Is it anywhere in the law that
now that we can you grow industrial hemp for other types of products, or is that not, are we not there yet?
That's long been an argument. It's a good question. The European cannabis, and cannabis has been around, they know, as a drug for at least 3,000 years, because they dug up the seeds in a little leather packet in a mummy found in China. Oddly enough, they found some bongs when they were excavating the gardens at Avon, upon Stratford, and for William Shakespeare. So his gardener was apparently smoking the stuff as well. But anyway, it's been around a long time. The European hemp is the one that is used for cords, and in cordage, mm-hmm. and it's the one that the...
for paper, for
yeah,
all kinds of stuff.
England required the colonists to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we came over here, they were required each household to have 100 plants. It was the European hemp. It has very low THC. Mm-hmm. The hemp indigenous to South and Central America comes a different hemp, and you look at all these different pictures, and it has a whole different molecular makeup. It produces this active substance, THC. And so that is the species we use. And then it's subdivided into two, the indica and the sativa. And then they have found about the pollination and all. So they've been able to crossbreed and hybrid these things and cultivate them now where they're... So the law now states it has to have 0.03% THC or it's not marijuana. So it's not this cordage hemp.
Right.
What you're talking about.
And the people that are growing these prize inner, hybrid type stuff that really gets you all wowy,
right.
They hate the idea of having someone in their neighborhood that's growing regular type of stuff because if it, a pollen is so tiny to cross fertilize all of a sudden someone else's medical stuff, you're going, wait, what are you've damaged me.
Yeah.
If you weren't damaged, you wouldn't be smoking it all right. So.
I know when they actually started to outlaw marijuana at the turn of the century, they accused Andrew Mellon and the DuPonts, because nylon was just being explored, of trying to use hemp for paper. And so the Hearst Network was looking at another source for paper, and DuPont was interested in promoting nylon. And so they were always accused of being the proponents of the making the hemp illegal.
Councilperson Mutchler?
Well, thank you, Chief, very, very much. And I appreciate you and your being vigilant on what might be for zoning. I just told Mayor that you might direct staff at the right time to look at how we can be sort of cutting edge and ahead of the curve on what kind of zoning implications it might mean for our city. Our family-friendly, safe city. And I know you always got lots and lots and lots of free time, so have at it.
Okay, boy, interesting subject. Any questions from the audience? Predictor of future drug use.
growing, if your neighbor's growing it, does it, like, spread? I mean, is it going to sprout up in my yard? Like, sometimes plants do? Yeah.
I don't expect to find out they're very cultivated.
You have. Cheap.
Chameleon has grown a sheep.
No. Having lived in Hawaii almost all my life, I mean, it grows well in the tropics, so I don't know if LSU develops something that grows in the Pacific Northwest, west outdoors. I don't think it's going to be.
Well, I guess the answer is, I guess we'll wait. High school, high school student has a question. Sure, back there. Sure. What's that now?
Is there going to be more
No.
Well, they can't smoke it in public. In their car.
Yeah.
In their car.
Okay, well, Councilperson Mustard, we will. I mean, I think this will not be the last time we'll have a meeting on this. It will be an education for all of us. Valuable use of our time.
Yeah, whole study session.
Okay, next up is Mayor Reports. The Mayor has nothing to report. Council Reports.
Take that example.
Councilperson Goodrich was first to hand up.
I just had an issue that came up, at least it came to my attention over old-fashioned Christmas. And that is with the alarm system in Pioneer Park. They were supposed to come out and replace the batteries prior to old-fashioned Christmas. They had not. And the alarm in my cabin went off twice during the time we were there. They, you know, punched the code, and we were in there, happy as could be, for a couple hours, and all of a sudden it started going beep, 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 beep. And no clue why. It went off and did that Saturday, and it also did that Sunday, and I've talked to several other people, and they were not happy campers with the alarm system the way it is right now.
Did you have them call the mayor?
That's a continuous.
Yeah.
That's a new system. Yes.
Yep.
Yes. A new system that's been trying to be operable for
about a year now.
Almost 2 years.
Very, very satisfactory system. We're all happy about it. I saw a hand up, Councilperson Zimmerman.
Mr. Mayor, it's come to my attention by a couple of people in town that now we have no place for people to do laundry. And there's some families that don't have laundry facilities. They're kind of in tough shape. And I was wondering if there was some place or suggestions. Tomorrow I was going to go to the community services and say if they could help address this, and maybe Paul with the Chamber of Commerce, but since the laundromat closed down, there are some people that their kids are going to school with dirty clothes, and they smell, and it's a health hazard, and it's just shameful, and it's tough on the kids.
So I know the United Church was talking about trying to get a washer and dryer, but I don't think they have the funds, or the plumbing. Yeah. The plumbing's not set up.
It takes it's like an industrial type of thing, so. But it's for Christmas, and it's just, you know, those people talking to me, they were almost crying. I was going, God, you know.
The Resource Center doesn't have an option either. They used to have some tokens that the people could take to the other place. Well, with them gone,
this lady was trying to do an interview, and
There are products that, if you go on the internet and look, I mean, there's lots of low-cost products to wash. Drying is not. There's not a solution. There's lots of
clothesline.
You know, yeah, clothesline.
Yeah.
But there's several low cost products in terms of washing clothes.
You can get a bucket like you use on the boat.
Yeah, that's kind of what.
Well, it makes small machines that you can do in your tub. And yeah. It's a cheaper option.
These people, they didn't have computer, internet, or they didn't have really a worthy car to get here from here to Bellingham.
Yeah, you might take some time and kind of maybe have some options ready. So, it is a problem.
We'll keep addressing it. So.
Okay, any other council reports? No. Okay, seeing none. Okay, staff reports. Finance director?
Nothing.
City administrator?
Nothing.
Planning?
Nothing.
Good job. City clerk?
Nothing, man.
Public Works Director?
Nothing.
Police Department? I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.